there. Welcome to Here to Speak, sponsored by Autumn Oak Speech, Voice, and Hearing, where we are rooted in care and focused on your independence. My name is Vilma, and I will be your host. Joining me today is Caitlin, SLP. Hi, Caitlin.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Today, we will be talking about cognitive speech therapy, what it is, who it's for, and why it matters. So before we begin, I thought it would be cool to ask you just a fun question.
Okay.
Speech related.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your favorite speech sound to produce, not to work on? What's your favorite speech sound?
To produce just 'cause?
Yeah.
I like the trilled R.
Really? That's so funny.
It's how I get kiddos' attention because they're not expecting me to just out of nowhere make the trilled R.
Really?
So, or you like if I'm trying to get my daughter to look at a camera, I'll just be like, yeah. Brrr.
You do it so well.
I speak Italian, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
So trilled R is
in Italian.
In Italian, yeah. Too. Mm-hmm. Can you say a word in Italian with the trilled R?
Arrivederci.
Oh, yeah. You know, I never thought about that. Obviously, I speak Spanish. So Spanish has trilled R. Mm-hmm. And I know Italian and Spanish sound very
similar.
Very similar. Yep. Yeah. So the first word that I always think of is perro. Mm-hmm. Perro. But what did you say? What was the word you said?
Arrivederci.
Uh-huh.
It's like the formal goodbye.
Oh, like farewell.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Fun. All right. So now, okay. Now we're going to jump in. So jumping into today's topic, which is cognitive speech therapy. First question, what is cognitive speech therapy?
So at face value, it is kind of exactly what it sounds like. So it's cognitive linguistic therapy. And so it is how cognition impacts, you know, how we communicate, you know, because a lot of the processes that we use to think are related to how we use language. And a lot of the processes we use to think impact how we use language. And there's other, you know, cognition is a very multifaceted thing. You know, you have memory, you have attention, you have awareness, you have executive functioning, which is kind of, you know, goal-based skills like organization or planning or problem solving. And all of those kind of impact how we function as humans, but also how we communicate with others or how we perceive and then process and use communication or, you know, inputs that we're getting, whether it's spoken or written. And so all of those processes can kind of impact how we're able to function and communicate as people, especially since right. humans are such social creatures. You know, communication is very important. And so if we're having cognitive difficulties, it definitely impacts that communication. So it's essentially therapy to work on kind of those higher thinking processes so that we can function better communicatively.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That sums it up really well. You know, who benefits from this type of therapy?
Anybody that has kind of an acquired cognitive deficit or disorder. So like, you know, somebody who's had a stroke or suffered a traumatic brain injury or, you know, somebody who is experiencing dementia that's, you know, impacting their day-to-day function. So kind of all of those groups could benefit from cognitive linguistic therapy. You know, any sort of disease or disorder that impacts your cognition, you know, Parkinson's disease, similar things like that, where it really takes a toll on, you know, that higher cognition. Right. Any of those people would benefit from cognitive communication therapy.
Right. Can you give us an example of what you have seen?
Absolutely. So I'm one of the few people, and my mother looks at me weird every time I say it, because I'll tell her I love pediatric brain injuries. She was like, no, you can't say that out loud in public. And so just cut that part out when you're editing.
Okay. that's your favorite.
Not my favorite, but definitely an interesting one because it's not one you see all the time. But
for sure.
You know, individuals that I've done therapy with have been children who are recovering post-traumatic brain injury after an automobile accident or after they were hit by a car while walking or, you know, suffered a fall or a blow to the head. So I was lucky enough to get to do a rotation at Shriners in Houston before they merged, and they had a subacute rehab for pediatric brain injuries.
So
it was really, really interesting to see and to get to do therapy with those kiddos who are just working on those skills to, you know, improve their day-to-day basic functioning, and then to see how far they can go with that amazing plasticity and that recovery time.
That's true.
Yes.
Yeah, brain plasticity.
Yes, but also they're still within that kind of critical window right after their accident. So, you know, with very intensive therapy. So you got to see really great progress over the course of a few months. Oh, so that was fun.
That is really interesting.
Yes.
And I then never also, thought about that.
Yeah. An adult brain injury. I also did a rotation at what is now Moody Neuro Moody Neuro Rehabilitation. And so those are adults who have, you know, acquired brain injuries, whether it's from a traumatic brain injury or a stroke or, you know, some other neuro condition. So there's a variety of, you know, ranges of severity and different skills that you're working on, because depending on the location and the severity of a stroke or an injury, it impacts different parts of the brain, which then impacts different systems and different functions. So, you know, someone might be working on higher level skills and someone may be working on memory or, you know, more basic communication. So it's just, it's interesting. It's very much patient-centered and patient-driven for what an individual needs to work on.
Right.
But then, yeah, also, you know, memory associated with dementia or cognitive deficits associated with Parkinson's, or, you know, difficulties post-stroke. I've worked with those patients as well. And so, you know, they all present a little bit differently. But, you know, everybody overall has the same goal of getting back the most function and independence they can. So.
Right, exactly. And that's our focus. Like, we want people to return to as close as they can to all those daily activities that they used to do that they enjoyed. Like, we want to get them as close to that as possible.
For sure.
That's amazing. So you mentioned that depending on what it is that happened to each patient, the goals may vary. But what specifically, what are some specific things that you work on as far as, say, memory or... I guess what I'm trying to ask is, what are, I know that you mentioned things like executive functioning.
Yeah. So memory, domains we look at.
What kind of things you work on?
Yeah. So with cognitive linguistic therapy, you know, it's important to be patient centered because that investment from the patient is really important for progress. And so we want to make sure it's something that they care about and that will help them get back to those tasks at home, like you said. And so, memory is one, and we try to identify, you know, some functional things that they're interested in or that they would use. And so we work on, you know, immediately recalling some things. So, you know, whether it's grocery lists or phone numbers, appointment times, grandchildren's names, things like that.
Okay.
So typically we'll work on, you know, recall, immediate recall. So, you know, I say something and you repeat it back to me right afterwards. And then we might delay it and work on delayed recall to see how long you can retain that information. And so we might do a 1 minute delay when we're starting and then increase it to 5, 10, 30 minutes. And then we may do it over multiple days or weeks.
Oh, wow. Yes. I see how you're how you're inserting challenges.
Yes.
In something like that, like delaying the recall. Yeah.
And then, you know, just depending on what the person's needs are. Are they still in the workforce? Are they going to go back to school after their recovery? You know, are they retired? What does their day-to-day look like? What activities are they trying to get back to? That might determine the different types of activities we use across all our goals, but for memory too. Like, do they manage their appointments? Are they doing their own driving, or do they have someone who does that for them? So then we may work on driving directions to go, you know, take their grandkids to the local library, or like, how do they get to the closest park to take their grandkid walking? right. you know, different things like that. So yeah. it's all very much dependent on the patient, but we do try to.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. And I think that's what, that is something that's awesome about working at either at Autumn Oak, because we really get to know our patients mm-hmm. and then we see what it is they desire, mm-hmm. what is most important to them. Yes. And we really work on those things
for sure
that are, you know, we make our goals patient-centered.
Absolutely.
We want to know what you want to do. Mm-hmm. We want to get you there.
Yes.
You know, instead of working on something mm-hmm. that they don't do every day. They don't take care of their own medications, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a useful thing for you.
Exactly.
But if you are talking to your, you know, your children mm-hmm. or your grandchildren and mm-hmm. you want to recall their names, that's mm-hmm. something that's more important.
For sure.
And so you look at that and you prioritize depending Absolutely. On what the patient needs and yeah. wants. That's Absolutely. Amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. But even in things like that, like name recall or just recalling information, mm-hmm. how many, I guess my question is like, how many things are going on in your brain? Like, we think recalling a certain object is just a one-way mm-hmm. connection in our brain, and it's not. Right. Yeah. Like, how many functions or how many things are happening in our brain when we think about something?
Well, and it's also tied into how you're perceiving and understanding, you know, the topic that we're discussing. Like, if you're having trouble with auditory comprehension and I verbally list eight things for you, yeah. you may not pick them up. You may need me to write down eight things mm-hmm. or show you eight pictures. So you mm-hmm. may need different supports depending on, again, which area of the brain was impacted and how severe that injury was.
Right. Right. Or even.
But yeah, so it's always very multifaceted when it comes to cognition
yes.
and lots of things at play.
Yes. And I just remembered even just speech, like mm-hmm. motor, mm-hmm. like motor is like a whole nother thing too.
Yep.
Because, when we think about something, it's not just a one-way connection. There are so many other connections going on in our brain
Very
to get to that thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yep. So, yeah, the brain is fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah, there's so many things going on.
Yes.
But that's so cool mm-hmm. that even an SLP plays such an important role in somebody's recovery, mm-hmm. you know, that has gone through a stroke or mm-hmm. a TBI.
Yep.
Communication is essential. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that you don't miss it until it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, like we for take sure. it for granted every day. Just mm-hmm. even hear us sitting here mm-hmm. talking. Our brains are doing so much work. Mm-hmm. So, but what I was trying to lead to was, let me look at my sheet.
Where is it? What was the last question?
So I think we were talking about goals, why it matters.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I think we've touched on that a little bit, is to make sure that you're able to have that independence and that quality yeah. of life that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So even someone who, you know, maybe didn't have a neurological event, but has kind of slowly seen a cognitive decline over the last 5 years and maybe has right. some dementia, but has noticed a big impairment in their ability to, you know, have conversations with friends over the phone halfway across the country because they're having trouble recalling details and then relaying them. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's someone that I've worked with. She had great conversational skills, mm-hmm. you know, not a lot of issues with problem solving or planning or organization, but just taking longer events, kind of summarizing them, breaking them down into like the important main details.
Oh.
Or like main ideas and key details, and then recounting those to her friends that she'd moved away from. She was having so much trouble remembering things to be able to tell a story.
Oh, wow.
Like, oh, yeah, my daughter got a new job, but she couldn't remember anything about the new job to be able to relay it. So yeah. she was having a lot of trouble, you know, mm-hmm. talking about her new life since she'd moved, mm-hmm. you know, and even like stories she'd seen on the news or, you know, books she'd read and wanted to tell them about a new mystery she liked.
Right.
Was just having trouble kind of putting all of that, remembering the details together. And putting it into words to be able to mm-hmm. clearly express
even
it.
Even just words, like just
mm-hmm. like
putting those
just,
thoughts into
exactly,
words.
Organizing those thoughts and then just being able to express them was a big challenge. Mm-hmm. Kind of where she was at cognitively with her dementia, which was very mild, mm-hmm. but that was such a big part of her life, you know, just communicating with others and being able to storytell and right. having that area impacted was really detrimental to her quality of life.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because if you can't communicate and you can't put your thoughts into words, mm-hmm. that's isolating.
Yes, you know? Very much so.
That's isolating, and that actually isolation can bring about depression, mm-hmm. and that can also affect your cognition, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's kind of, what do they call it? Domino effect, mm-hmm. right? Because one thing mm-hmm. makes the other chip fall,
yes.
et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, but that is awesome. So mm-hmm. what were some of the things that you introduced to her?
We worked a lot on auditory comprehension and recall of details from paragraphs, stories, videos. Mm. And then, you know, for homework, I'd have yeah. her tell me about, you know, personal events that she'd experienced. Mm-hmm. You know, and if she was having trouble, I'd have her take a lot of photos to kind of spark some things, but also so that we had a shared context. You know, if she was having yeah. trouble recollecting that, we could at least look at the picture. And I could ask her questions about the pictures, and that would kind of spark some things. And she could at least mm-hmm. answer questions about the pictures if she didn't remember all of the details. But usually it mm-hmm. kind of sparked more conversation about the topic she was trying to, yeah. you know, tell me about. So,
and yes, I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because I would see sometimes in a patient, if I was working on something super simple, say word recall, and it was showing them pictures of, you know, things in the house, mm-hmm. right? And then at the end of the session, sometimes they just tell me like, I don't see how that's functional, or mm-hmm. I don't see how that is going to help me. Like, I'm just labeling. I'm mm-hmm. just labeling pictures. But can you explain a little bit more about like how that forms? That's a building block, mm-hmm. basically, to go up the difficulty scale, right? For sure.
Yeah, because yeah. we always have to start somewhere. And so if exactly. we're working on, you know, naming or remembering the names of things, you know, you want to be able to start with things that you're commonly going to see through your day. And then you right. can build that onto more personal things, or producing sentences about those things, you mm-hmm. know, and just kind of work up the hierarchy. But it also, yeah, it kind of depends on yeah. kind of...
what it is what, they are yes. looking for, what they want. Like mm-hmm. I said, household items, but, mm-hmm. you know, it could be like different foods, and some of them mm-hmm. come, you know, they can recall it pretty quickly. Sometimes mm-hmm. they don't. But something I've just noticed is that mm-hmm. they will get a little frustrated because it seems like it's such a simple task.
Yes. And that's, you know, something that I've run into is patients don't always understand why they're being referred for cognitive mm-hmm. therapy, because they're like, I can remember things fine.
Right.
And so, or like, I talk fine. I don't need speech therapy. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to you right now.
Right.
And so, you know, they're like, physical therapy is what I need, because what I'm having trouble with is walking, and that's what I need to work on. So get out of here so I can have my PT time.
Yeah.
But, you know, patient education to just help them understand what it is and why it's important. So yes, you and I are having a conversation beautifully. You're not having any trouble talking at all. Speech therapy also works on cognition, not just speech, which includes some things like memory, attention, problem solving, mm-hmm. awareness, you know, and you would like to get back to walking. That's a goal that you might have. And mm-hmm. so a barrier to that goal is safety awareness right now. We're not,
right.
you know, noticing that we're hooked up to all these lines, and that to get up without falling, we have to disconnect them or ask for help. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just kind of showing them where it would be helpful to get them back to what they are wanting to do
right.
is where I would usually get more buy-in from the patients that didn't really understand what we were working on, or why they mm-hmm. got referred to me, or why speech was, you know, coming to see them.
Yeah. So. And I think that is so important. At Autumn Oak, since we are a private practice, mm-hmm. we have a little more flexibility mm-hmm. as to how much time we get to spend with our patients.
For sure.
And so I know that a lot of y'all will take the time and sit down and talk to the patient about, like Absolutely. You said, like, this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. This is my role in your recovery. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, you really take the time to explain
yeah,
what's going on and the goals.
It takes a lot of, I mean, it's a two-way street. It takes right. a lot of buy-in from the patient, and also on the part of the therapist. It's a commitment from both sides to be able to you know, continue that therapeutic relationship and make that progress. And so the more they understand about why, you know, they're coming to see me and what we're working on, you know, versus like, I already know what a lamp is. Why do I need to tell you that's a lamp?
Right.
You know, just explaining what it is we're doing and why and what areas of cognition it's working on can be helpful. But also, like, that's why I think we're kind of in a unique position since we are a private practice, because a lot of times people know what they're coming to. I've had a few referrals that have not been sure. Like, my doctor sent me here for, you know, cognitive linguistic therapy, but I don't really know what that means.
Right.
And so that takes a little more education. But a lot of times if people are coming in, you know, they're looking for those services versus like in an inpatient setting when we get assigned to a bed and they're like, I don't want you, get out and send me PT.
Right. It's so different, right?
Yes,
you know, people, different. Yeah, seeking and our services. Yes. Yeah.
And we are able to spend the time versus, you know, when we have to hit so many rooms in a short amount of time and everyone has goals that all look the same.
Right.
You know, to try to move them on to the next phase, discharge, you know.
And you do your best. I mean, you do your best to, in that position.
Yeah.
But obviously working in a private practice, you have that flexibility to.
Much more flexibility.
Yeah.
And a lot more ability to be more personalized and patient-centered.
Definitely. I've seen that difference with other, you know, with other SLPs that I've worked with. They tell me the same things, you know. So I haven't worked at a inhab, right? Is that what it's called? Facility.
I've been at a long-term rehab and a skilled nursing facility.
Okay. So, yeah, like those kind of facilities. I've never worked outside of Autumn Oak. As I'm an SLP assistant, that's what I've been doing, and the majority of my patients have been littles. So everything you're telling me, it's what I've learned in school, but I haven't actually put it into action. So it's coming back to me, but I have questions too.
Yeah.
It's so interesting and fascinating, everything with the brain and speech. So fascinating.
Yep.
All right. So we're going to wrap up the episode.
Yeah.
I was thinking we can share a couple tips for some of our patients that may have a loved one with, you know, communication difficulties, either have gone through, like you had mentioned earlier, a stroke or TBI or any kind of.
So, I mean, if you have a relative or a loved one who has some communication difficulties after, you know, an acquired cognitive deficit or disorder, like it's dependent on the patient a lot of times, but there's some general things that can be helpful. Kind of just slowing down your rate of communication and asking one question at a time versus asking rapid fire questions and then giving them extra time to process and answer. You know, it may take them more time to take in what you said or more time to think about what they want to say or more time to get started making that message come out. And so just giving them ample time to respond is good. And then if you see that they're having some kind of difficulty understanding what you're saying, you can try, you know, adding some visuals to help or even writing down some of the keywords from your questions or statements. You know, if written language or if, you know, visual pictures kind of help them pick up more on what you're saying. And that also gives them kind of the opportunity to point to one of those if they are having trouble saying it. But yeah, so those are some tips, but, you know, keeping your language kind of clear and concise, short, not a lot of, you know, extra descriptive or floral language, not as much like figurative speech, but just kind of to the point, that can be helpful. But yeah, if you have concerns, definitely, you know, talk to their doctor about a speech referral. They might benefit from cognitive linguistic therapy if they're having trouble communicating.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening to today's episode of Here to Speak, sponsored by Autumn Oak Speech, Voice, and Hearing, where we are rooted in care and focused on your independence. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe or like this video so you can see more of us. If you have any more questions, please leave them in the comments and we will address them maybe in the next episode. Who knows? So, but thank you for joining us today. Thanks, Caitlin.
Thank you.
Bye.